Good day, everyone. We are excited for you to be here on our inaugural first annual. I don't know how people usually say it, but we are excited for this first episode of the Riddle Report. Riddle Report is an opportunity for you to learn more about our faculty, staff, and students and other community leaders who make Embry-Riddle, Embry-Riddle. So we are excited to have our first awesome guest, somebody who I know a lot, but you don't. So you'll learn more about his story, Dr. Brian Watson. So here's the official welcome. This is why I get paid to read. Welcome to the Riddle Report podcast, where we explore the dynamic journeys of exceptional individuals in aviation, space, and engineering. Dr. Brian Watson serves as an assistant professor of systems engineering with the College of Engineering. He has a range of experiences from serving as a submarine officer, if I'm correct, to mentoring dozens of student researchers. He is beloved by students, faculty, staff alike. I'm your host, Ronnie Mack, and today I am honored to welcome the illustrious Dr. Brian Watson.
Oh, that was super nice, Ronnie. Thank you. It's great to be here and excited to chat.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. We are glad to be here. So we'll ask a couple questions, learn more about your story.
Yeah, perfect.
And then how you connect with the Riddle family. So first thing, just tell us your story. Tell us a little about your background. How'd you go from Georgia Tech to submarines to the classroom?
That's
a usual path for people.
Yeah. So I actually went to the Naval Academy for undergraduate, did systems engineering, and there was a little bit of a scheduling mishap. And at the Naval Academy, you have to have 16 credits, right? You have to be a full-time student. And I finished some credits early, and so I had a faculty I admired, Dr. Piedmeier, who she said, why don't you do some research? And I said, oh, I like research. Oh, okay. Oh, I just didn't know if I like research, but I like this faculty. And she said, I have this project and that project, and this one's going to Europe. And I said, I'll do that one. That one sounds great. And so I did some research, graduated, went to the submarine force, worked on USS Louisville, which was out of Pearl Harbor, which was a great place to live. And then worked at Naval Prototype Training Unit at Charleston. So it's a training reactor. So basically, it's the old submarines that have been converted into training platforms. And so students get about 6 months of classroom instruction and then 6 months of instruction on this training reactor, actually doing hands-on, how do you operate the nuclear reactor.
Okay.
Realized that I really love teaching. I got a chance to work with some of their continued training and then decided, okay, I wanted to keep teaching, got to go back to school, went to Georgia Tech, studied there, and then graduated from there and came to Embry-Riddle about 3 years ago.
Awesome.
That's the high level kind of overview.
Okay. And tell us a little bit more about your Riddle experience. So I know you're from mentoring research students to some of your other awards and accolades, but like, what does Dr. Watson do on the campus?
What do I do? Okay. That's my wife asks me every day. So what do I do on the campus? So like I said, this is my fourth year on campus. I would say a big part of obviously for all of us here at Embry-Riddle, like one of the reasons I wanted to come here was that teaching is part of our DNA, right? It's really important to us to connect with students, really important to us to have a good classroom environment. So a big part of my day is teaching classes. So this semester I'm teaching Introduction to Systems Engineering. I love that class. I tell people this is as good as my career is gonna get because I'm teaching a class that involves Lego robots. And so it's not gonna get any better than that. And so we teach them, what is system engineering? How do you apply it? And why is it even a field? And you know, and they do that through project-based learning. Outside of that, I run a research group called the Biologically Inspired Design for Resilience Group. And so what we do is we look at how can you take inspiration from nature and apply it to engineered systems in order to increase the resilience. So we've looked at everything from ants to snapping shrimp to sandpipers to ecosystem structures, things like that. And then the final part of my day is I'm very blessed to be part of the Electrical Engineering and Computer Science faculty. We have amazing faculty in that department, working with them both on helping all of our, we have five majors in our department, so helping them with the things that cause the department to actually tick, serving in that capacity, and just working on various initiatives with them that are part of what make Embry-Riddle run. So yeah, that's
awesome,
kind of
awesome. So we may have some people outside our community watch this podcast. Explain systems engineering to somebody, mainly me, who may not know all the details of what system engineering is.
Yeah. So I'll give myself an out and say that I love system engineering because it's so broad, right? So there's a great paper I refer students to that's called The 12 Roles of a System Engineer. And so there's a lot of different things that someone with the title or the background of system engineer can do. But the way I like to describe it succinctly is if you start at the very front end of a system and you say, do we even need this thing? Or do we, what is the thing we need to build? And what are the needs that need to be filled? And what are we able to build? So that part, kind of very front end, through the building, integration, testing, all the way to the other end of we've built the thing and now we have to get rid of this system and we probably don't want to contaminate the earth, right? So how do we dispose of it, recycle it, right? And everything in between. So really it's a full life cycle approach to how do we actually get these systems that we all depend on in our daily lives.
What was an example of one of those daily systems that we may see in our field, but maybe outside of our field too, or maybe two examples?
Yeah. So there's a wide variety of systems, industries that hire system engineers. I'll give a shout out. One of my former students, Rebecca DeMarco, she's a system engineer. Yeah. So she was, she's changed roles, but previously she was working on the Artemis mission, working on basically we have requirements. So things that we know the system needs to do. And how do we actually make sure that the specific discipline engineers have built a system to meet those requirements, right? So that's one example. But we have a wide variety outside of aviation aerospace. We have people who've worked in robotics, people who've the automobile industry hires a lot of system engineers. And I even have another former student who has his master's in systems and he's doing parachute testing, right? Parachute design for like special forces, things like that, right? So that's one of the things I love about it. It's so diverse. You go to the conferences and you have your Lockheeds and your Boeings and your Northrops, right? And that's great. But you also have, the Army Corps of Engineers who's designing water mitigation for the floodwater control.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a very broad discipline that's widely applicable, which is I like that.
Awesome. Awesome. Would the redesign of our Chick-fil-A be a systems design?
Yes.
Oh, so that one right.
So a common connection between Ben, Chadbeck, your former assistant.
Yeah.
So he got his
shout out to Ben too.
Yeah. Shout out to Ben. So Ben got his master's in systems, and his graduate project was building a model of the campus to optimize flow of students and resources around campus. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we're still pushing to see how we can implement that. But yeah, absolutely. I went and visited a friend who does modeling simulation for like, how do you actually plan the queues for roller coaster rides? Right. Things like that. So that gets a little bit into industrial engineering and operations research, but these are closely related fields. So, yeah.
So kids, if that's helpful, tell your parents to take you to Disney because you're trying to be an engineer.
That's right. There's all sorts of,
You gotta do some. You got to do some background research. And then one last from the academic side.
Yeah.
What in nature inspires you? You talk about the R&R piece. What is that nature? What is that thing in nature? And then what is the maybe engineering application we see?
So I've always been involved in the outdoors, right? Growing up, my parents had me do Boy Scouts, so go out into the woods and be miserable, right? But I think for me, specifically what inspires me is the fact that you have these group behaviors, right? Which we call emergence in system engineering, but we don't have central control. There's no director, right? So you go and you watch, one of the projects we're doing is sandpipers. I think I mentioned it earlier. And the reason that project started was my wife was on the phone with her mom and we were at the boardwalk at Daytona Beach. And I was just sitting there watching the sandpipers. And I was like, oh, there's something here. But you watch them and you watch the way that they move together and come to the water and then move away and come back. And there's these kind of sophisticated, you can almost say like, oh, there's this group motion that's happening, but there's nobody who's directing it, right? And you can think about from our own experience, right? Like traffic jams or phantom traffic jams, right? Where you have these waves of stopped cars.
Yeah.
But it's a system level behavior. And so we've done a wide variety of projects. I'll stick with the sandpiper example. So for that one, the sandpipers are looking for food sources, right? Mm-hmm. But also the waves are disrupting that search. And so we asked ourselves, there's a whole class of problems called optimization problems. And we said, can we design an optimization problem where instead of literal birds looking for literal food, we're actually looking for the solution to like a mathematical problem? And can we inspire the way we search that mathematical space based on the way the sandpipers are moving on the beach? So
bridging nature and tech, nature and engineering.
And we're really interested in, can we not necessarily like, So for example, we have a robot swarm that we use to test these things, but we don't have robots that look like sandpipers, right? Because we're interested in what is functionally what's happening. What's like the function that we're seeing occur? And can we take that function or that decision and apply it in another context for benefit?
Awesome. So I want to talk a little bit more about your classroom and research experience. Yeah. What would you say your classroom philosophy is? If I had to sign up for a Dr. Watson class tomorrow, what kind of culture and what kind of philosophy would I encounter?
So it's a great question. I always tell my students I've kind of three goals. And so the first is I really want to push them towards practical application, real world scenarios, right? It's great to solve, go back to optimization. It's great to solve an optimization problem, an abstract, but it's much better to say, how should I organize the lines at Chick-fil-A, right? That's an optimization problem that, that people can really get their teeth into. And then really in the real world, right, people want you to solve real problems. And so we try to base our, I try to base my classes around real world scenarios. The second thing is I believe in higher order thinking, right? So do you play any instruments, Ronnie? Or you like me in that you just admire people who do?
I got to third grade to the recorder, struggled and kind of teetered off after the recorder.
So I did the same thing with the piano.
Got you.
But for those who do play instruments, right, or if you take a lesson, right, no one like plays an instrument and just says, watch me. Okay, now you do it. You're good.
Got you.
You have to have hands-on. You have to practice, right? And so for my classes, I really try to, you know, I love... I do, we do, you do, where I do something, then we do it together with basically you, the students directing, and I'm me writing, and then you do, hey, here's a packet, here's a handout, find a teammate, right? And so doing that higher level performance, memorization, especially in the age of large language models, right, is just not going to get it done. Yeah. You have to be able to apply it, you have to be able to explain it, you have to be able to creatively use it in new situations. And then the final thing, super important to me, is a culture of error. People make mistakes, right? I'm sure in during this podcast, I'll misspeak or stutter, and that's okay. That's part of being human. And a lot of students come with this kind of anxiety or expectation that I have to be perfect at all times.
Yes, very true.
And that's not what we need for education, right? And so I try to make it very clear that I expect you to mess up. I expect me to mess up. And that's part of the learning experience. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that creates a very great rapport, probably almost a mentor relationship. Can you talk about maybe some of the students you've mentored and some of those success stories?
Yeah, absolutely. So Simba Riddle students are awesome. So there's the plug for that. And I would say that our students, having been at some different institutions, stack up with any students anywhere. And what I've noticed is the students who... Basically, the students I had the opportunity to work with, especially in research, and a lot of my research students, they started in class and they're like, well, that I guess I want to hang out with this guy some more. We'll do some research. But just the opportunity to kind of talk to them about little things. Well, not little to them, but, you know, hey, here's an internship I'm looking at. How do I prepare for the interview? Then spit, you know, things like that. Things like I had a student the other day emailed me asking about job offers. Right. And that's such an honor to be able to like walk with students through that major decision. You asked about some success stories. So Grace Grattan, there's another shout out. So Grace is I think she's a sophomore. She might be a junior. She'll let me know after she listens to this in the space physics. But she does research with the College of Engineering. So I will say our research group, we span a wide variety of majors who come. We're a College of Engineering EECS lab, but we have human factors, space physics, engineering physics, all sorts of different students, business students who come and do research with us. But anyway, so she did research with me. I mentioned her. Her research was actually about the fact that there's a species of Amazon river turtle that all hatch at the same time, even though they're laid over a long period of time, like almost a week, I think, and then they hatch the same day. We're interested in that because that shows that they're basically communicating together to be able to decide when's the right moment to hatch. Okay. And they're doing that through vibrations. They pass through the sand, which is super, super interesting. So Grace did that work. And then she was recently awarded a Goldwater scholarship, super, super prestigious scholarship. She was also awarded an astronaut scholarship, right? Went with me to California to present at the Conference of System Engineering Research. And so you have students like that who are, and for those who aren't familiar with the podcast, Goldwater's, you know, top 100 undergrad students in the country, right? It's incredibly difficult to get. we've had the joy of having two students selected as DoD Smart Scholars. So that pays for their grad school, which is pretty incredible. Three students have submitted invention disclosures. And then we've probably taken, 10 to 15 students on conferences over the last couple of years. And then that's so rewarding, right? They do all this work at Embry-Riddle, and you do work, good work, but you're still not, you know, there's a little bit of imposter syndrome. You're not really sure. And you go to conference and now you're presenting in front of your peers and you're getting that good feedback. And just seeing a student who, you know, maybe 2 years ago didn't know what scientific research was, and then go to somewhere like Washington, D.C., or we just got back from Ottawa for our conference, presenting to, in that case, an international audience and getting positive feedback. Mm-hmm. Is just super rewarding to watch how you see that confidence kind of grow, you know?
Yeah. So you're essentially teaching them inside and outside the classroom, and then you're showing them by example at the conference level of this is how you present a paper, this is how you present your content, this is how you position yourself as an expert.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I go back to the students are really good, mm-hmm. right? And I think that I'll talk about our lab. They've created a culture where they're encouraging each other. Yes. They're teaching each other. We have a large repository of tools that they use. Mm-hmm. So things like, here's an example poster template. And so they're teaching each other. And so I want to say, it's like, I feel like I'm along for the ride, right? Yes. You know, that's super, super rewarding.
All right. Awesome. So you've really talked to us about your teaching experience, and I feel like I hear a lot of things of leadership. Mm-hmm. What did the military experience and even your teaching experience teach you about your personal leadership philosophy?
Oh, so that's a great question. I would say, so there's some very practical pieces, mm-hmm. right? So one of my old submarine friends, Nate Stemple, used to say, the only way you can get everything done is to do two things at once, which that's a very like hustle approach,
gotcha,
right?
Gotcha.
But even just, you know, the military approach of how do you track things that have to happen on a cyclic basis? How do you organize kind of all these different pieces that have to occur? And then I would say that the most important thing, and this was both military and pre-military, another Boy Scout lesson, right?
Gotcha.
Is there's two ways to assess a mission afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. The first is, did the mission get done, right? But the second is, will your team ever work with you again, right? And so for me, I kind of combine that thought process, and then in the military's unique environment, because you really don't have people who volunteer only for a semester, right? I'm a firm believer if you take care of people, right, that's the best leadership style, right? Gotcha. And, you know, we've all walked during the pandemic, right? We all had to pivot online, right? Students will have seasons in their life where, hey, I have someone sick, or, hey, I'm, by the way, I can't come to our meeting because there's water coming out of the roof of my apartment, right? And taking care of students, I think, both beyond just like the research output, but on the work output, mm-hmm. I think pays dividends in the long run, right? Yeah. My dad was a big Zig Ziglar fan. I don't know if you know Zig Ziglar, mm-hmm. a motivational speaker from like, I guess, 80s, 90s. And he would say, right, you can get everything in life you want if you just help enough other people get what they want, right? And I think it's important, but that's, by the way, that's a truth, but not a strategy. It's not like I can manipulate people. Yeah. But I think there's a lot of truth to that, right?
Yeah. And then can you speak just the output of those leadership experience? Can you talk a little bit about the accolades you got on campus? So I know in my previous role, you got like faculty mentor, research mentor of the year. Like, you've created a long list of like great experiences here.
Sure. I was honored with 2 years ago, College of Engineering Teacher of the Year. Mm-hmm. Last year, Campus Teacher of the Year. Like you said, Research Mentor of the Year. Before that, I was a Pat Tillman Foundation Fellow, which was is continued to be an incredible experience. And we can chat about it more if you want.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And then NSF GRFP, which was the fellowship that paid for my grad school. And then the last thing I'll say, what makes me probably the most proud, is James Hand, my PhD student, just recently won the Best Paper Award at the conference we went to, which was the largest system engineering conference in the world. He won the Brian Maher Best Student Paper Award, which was, I almost dropped my phone. I was so happy and shocked. So
yeah, I think that all speaks to the leadership and the culture of understanding that you're really building with your students. What is, and as we're coming to a close with a couple more questions, and we're approaching the centennial, what has been your favorite riddle moment since you've been here?
Oh, my favorite riddle. I think my favorite riddle, I want to say moments, I'm going to cheat a little bit.
Gotcha.
Is that since coming to Embry-Riddle, two friends who I knew before I came to Riddle have come to join me, right? And I think, so Dr. Hilton and Dr. Gishin, and I tell people that I've enjoyed Riddle so much that I've fooled some other people into coming along for the ride, right?
In the van, we're coming.
And that to me has been my favorite thing, is that it's an environment where there's plenty of places where faculty are putting in the time, right? But for me, I think the experience here, the support, once again, right, my department, I really love, has made it so when people are like, hey, should I come be part of Embry-Riddle? I'm like, you should come and you should make it a point to put it high on your list. And I think that to me has been kind of my favorite part of Embry-Riddle, is watching the community grow and being able to share with people kind of what it's like here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So as we come to a close, any final words or any challenges to the audience?
So the challenge, I would say, is I'll speak from a research side. I think put yourself out there, right? Go back to that culture of error. Some of our most successful students have started as college freshmen, right? First semester college freshman. Grace started as a first semester college freshman.
Gotcha.
Right? And when you come to Embry-Riddle, you don't have to come in knowing everything, right? You have to come in wanting to try something new, right? Wanting to put in the work, and then awesome things will happen, right? There's a long list of it. I mean, I brought a group of middle school students here last year on a Saturday, and on most college campuses on a Saturday, maybe there's a football game, right? And then pretty quiet. Yeah. And we walked around and we looked at AMRA testing the RoboSub. We looked at EarthSeds doing a pressure test of their rocket. The Formula One team was out in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many incredible things, but the first step is you got to get involved and you got to put yourself out there.
Awesome. Awesome. So you hear a lot of lessons about involvement, leadership, serving others in and outside the classroom, and sandpipers. So
that's right.
I'm going to take that home. So the most paramount question I want us to end with, what is your go-to Chick-fil-A order?
Ooh, all right. My go-to Chick-fil-A order. So it's going to be the grilled chicken meal. But I'm going to substitute a frosted coffee for the drink. And then with the waffle fries is great.
All right. The sandpipers, no eating chicken.
No sandpipers. No, they got those little, I forgot the name of them, little shell creatures that they're going after.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much for your time, Brian Watson. It was a true pleasure hearing your insights and reflections, your impact on students and alumni and also other faculty. I mean, you're part of a recruiting team, it sounds like, too, has been so great for the institution. So thank you for sharing your story at the Riddle Report. We look forward to having more conversations in the future. Want to leave us with one phrase, one story, one community, one ERAU. Thank you again.
Hey, thanks so much, Ronnie. What a pleasure. Mm-hmm.